and welcome to Moody with Dr. Sage. This is my first show and a new show on KX93.5. And we're going to talk about some interesting topics, many of which relate to our moods, our minds, and our real lives. I am a clinical psychologist, and I have a wonderful guest today joining me. Her name is Janine Nicole. And we're going to talk about the idea of never being enough in Orange County. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk a lot about worthiness and vulnerability.
At 17, I started to starve myself. I thought that love was a kind of emptiness. And at least I understood then the hunger I felt. And I didn't have to call it loneliness. We all have a hunger.
With Dr. Sage, as I said before, our last song by Florence and the Machine, which I highly recommend, her new album. We're going to be talking about our moods, our minds, and our real lives every Sunday morning live at 8 a.m. And I'm hoping to be bringing guests on, and sometimes I'll be by myself. But I'd love for you to email me with any questions or ideas or comments at moodywithdrsage@gmail.com. And in the meantime, let me just say one quick thing, which is that this show is meant to serve for informational purposes only. And basically what I'm saying is that any feedback or comments or anything you might hear does not imply that we are in a therapeutic relationship or that you are in one with one of my guests, despite the questions. But if you do need psychological treatment, I highly encourage you to seek that with a mental health professional. Okay, so to get started, I really thought a lot about today's show and sort of how I wanted to present myself and my goals. And I think the idea of never being enough is something that, especially in Orange County, we deal with. And so the idea is, you know, use the sentence, I am never blank enough. And I'm sure all of you can put your own words in, but most things that come up are things like good enough, smart enough, pretty enough, rich enough, successful, skinny, whatever. You need to put your own words in there. But I think this idea is so pervasive in our culture. And so I've asked one of my dearest friends to come on, who is an MFT associate, to hold my hand also, but also because she's also brilliant and wonderful and has a lot of great things to share. And I thought we'd just have a conversation, not looking to be the greatest authority on all things therapy related, but I do have a passion for my job and helping people, and I know that you do too. So, Janine, what is your experience with this idea of never being enough, I guess, both in your practice and personally?
Do we have 5 hours to talk? It is, clearly I relate to it, especially in my early 20s, and it's something I'm mindful of throughout my day. I also, in my past practice, where I've dealt with executive men seeking treatment for substance abuse, it's pervasive for them as well. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you're brought up this topic. I think it's really important for people to discuss so we know that we're not alone, and the only people feeling at times not worthy enough, not good enough. So, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me this morning. Oh,
thank you for joining me. I'm so grateful that you're here. The idea is, a lot of these ideas actually have come from Brené Brown, which I think many people are becoming very familiar with. I've run a lot of groups with her material, and she's just released another new book, this last year, But what I love about her is she talks so authentically about what it means to feel vulnerable and how that connects to sort of never being enough. Mm-hmm. And one of the things she talks about is the first thing in the morning we wake up, before we even get out of bed, right? We're thinking, oh my gosh, I didn't get enough sleep last night. I didn't get enough done. I have so much to do today. Mm-hmm. And our life just starts that way. The whole day begins with this sort of scarcity culture, this idea of scarcity. There's never going to be enough energy, time, love, money, whatever. And so I guess the issue is, I always say this to my patients, that I think everyone struggles with worthiness. It's just a matter of how much you struggle with it, right?
Yeah.
So in your experience, where do you think, I guess let's just talk about executive men, as because that's a place that you have done a lot of work. I know you have a lot of other experience as well, and we'll talk about that too, because I'm going to have you come back, please. But tell me about, where do you see, I think in this culture of, high performance and mm-hmm. success, on the outside, you would think that, oh, they don't struggle with that. Look how well they're doing. All the boxes are checked.
Right?
Home, wife, car, success, husband, child. Everything looks perfect. Mm. What's been your experience with that?
It's interesting. I was thinking about this driving here today, about the culture as well. You had talked about just this culture of scarcity. I think a lot of these men grew up with demanding fathers, some aspects of their childhood where they, I would say, struggled with the relationships with their mother or father. In some, there were abuse. Mm-hmm. There was a history of either physical abuse, sexual abuse, that greatly impacted them and had that little seed of worthiness or a lack of worthiness. And I think some of their accomplishment and striving was to try to repair and get acceptance and love from that parent. I saw that consistently. So for me and the work that I've done with the men and even myself, it's their roots of injury from childhood mm-hmm. that I think, as you were saying, their degrees that really ramped it up for them of not feeling enough. And if I can just succeed enough, accumulate enough, maybe I'll feel okay inside. Maybe I'll get that love and acceptance if the parent's still alive. So I saw a lot of that, which I found fascinating. And then culturally, like historically, I was thinking about since the 80s, that greed is good. Remember the movie, Greed is Good, Wall Street?
Yep.
And since the 80s, it feels like it's culturally more pervasive mm-hmm. about succeeding, having enough, competitive, walking over other people to get your share or more.
Right.
So it's interesting. I think, so to answer your question, I see some family of origin issues that fostered and planted some of those seeds. And then I agree in terms of culturally, there's been a shift since the 50s or 60s, where it was more kind of family-based and connection and not all about succeeding and accomplishing and having dynasty in some of those shows.
Right.
That showed just mega wealth, extraordinary lifestyle.
Well, and to be honest, I mean, you know, living in Laguna myself and working in Newport, I mean, talk about mega wealth. There's a lot of mega wealth.
Right.
There's a lot of lack of mega wealth, too. So I don't necessarily know that it matters, you know, whether you have or you have not in terms of your value, which, you know, you should think, well, I have all these things, I should have more value. But I think the culture of comparison is mm-hmm. also really a big piece of this. You know, I've watched my kids tell me that, you know, because of social media and things like that, no matter how good you are at something, there's always somebody a click away who's better at you, better than you, I should say. And so there's this idea that, you know, obviously the research has shown the more time you spend on social media, mm-hmm. the more your depression and anxiety tend to increase.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that is a big piece of it. It's just we're always looking around and we're just flooded by imagery of what we don't have and what looks so beautifully packaged mm-hmm. on a picture, on a posting or whatever.
Yes. And I've also kind of pondered and reflected upon here in Newport or Laguna. I wonder, and I think it's true, that no matter how much you have, let's say you're halfway up the hill, mm-hmm. I'm wondering if those people feel, well, I'm not at the top of the hill in terms of my home
right.
or the cars. That I do think that regardless of the status, people still do struggle with feeling not good enough, and there's always higher to strive towards.
Right, I agree. And that's why I think it's such a great topic, because it just, no matter where you are socioeconomically, this feeling of never being enough is just so pervasive.
Yeah.
You know, I think that also ties into the idea of perfectionism.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that I hear even kids in my practice say, oh, it has to be perfect.
Yes.
It's like, nope, it doesn't exist. But for some reason, we've all bought into this idea that if we can just get it a little bit better, it'll be perfect. And then there's this illusion of control, and it'll all be fine.
Yeah.
But it's not.
I think sometimes, even personally, I notice that if I see myself or observe myself being perfectionistic and I stop and reflect, it's usually fear, right?
Yeah.
In
yeah.
that moment, it's about fear. And if I can over-fixate on this one thing and have it be perfect, it takes me out of that feeling of fear.
Right.
And it's okay going back to being human. We are human. It is okay to feel fearful sometimes. We don't have to manage it away with perfectionism or
right.
other things that we do.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. And so I think the idea is that if we can control it, mm-hmm. right, then we can manage the fear. We don't have to deal with the fear because it all is going to be handled or managed by us. And that's just an illusion.
Yeah.
Even if it's your home, you know, I always laugh. The studies say that, right, if your home is picked up and clean, you know, of course that contributes to a sense of well-being. But the truth is, for a lot of people, they have this false belief system that if it all looks perfect on the outside, it's all
right.
perfect on the inside, which is just a fallacy.
Absolutely. And it can go to extremes. I remember a colleague and a friend of mine 10 years ago, her house was so perfect, the pillows on the sofas, that her teenagers could not, if they sat on the sofa and messed up a pillow, I'm not joking, she would go into a rage.
Oh my gosh.
Like not healthy,
yes.
too extreme.
Yes.
She's trying to find peace with the perfect house.
Yeah, that reminds me of like our grandmother's, right, with the plastic on the couch. Like, it needs to go, and that was like the room thou shalt not go into. It's like, what is the purpose of this room? You can't even use it. So I guess the other thing that brings that all this brings up for me, which I know that Brené Brown talks about a lot, is the idea of shame. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts about shame and perfectionism in comparison?
Shame is debilitating. It is terribly uncomfortable to be in it, as anyone who's felt it has been there. And the perfectionism, I think shame, from my thoughts on shame, that it's, I'm being victimized by it if I sit in it. I, over the years, have really done a lot of work to let go of shame from childhood issues. I think most of us have some little nuggets from childhood.
Or
or a lot.
Yeah.
No one escapes with the, there is no perfection going back to. There's no perfect childhood.
Right.
Yeah, for me, it's just been something that I've mindfully worked on over the years, and I'm happy to report that I don't feel shame very often.
That's great.
Yeah, but I do believe in my own story, my own path, that utilizing therapy, if someone's really struggling with a lot of shame and low self-esteem and perfectionism to the point of it starting to be destructive. Mm-hmm. I think many women, we have a complicated going back to not thin enough. Many of us have a complicated relationship with our bodies.
Yeah.
And I just know for me in the past, there was a lot of kind of struggle, impairment, and feeling a lot of shame. So I did work on it. Mm-hmm. One of the kind of tools and things that has been very helpful for me over the years is self-acceptance, self-love. I love affirmations, like positive affirmations. I am enough. I am thin enough, good enough, smart enough. Mm-hmm. Very simple affirmations. I actually found this very helpful with even the executive men that I worked with that had really a lot of low self-esteem and just felt unworthy, where you would do a very simple statement, an affirmation, and look in the mirror in your eyes as they would state it. And in the beginning, sometimes they were like, I can't do that. I feel ridiculous. I can't even look myself in the eyes.
Right.
And it was so interesting as, you know, gently encouraging them, well, just give it a try. See if anything shifts. See if you feel a little better. With like, over a couple weeks, it was so fun to hear many of them come back and say, I've been doing it. I can look myself in the eyes and I'm feeling better.
Wow.
So I love it's very simple, but positive affirmations. Also, any of that shame, like when going through a community where the car next to you is much nicer, the houses are much nicer, I find taking a moment to have gratitude, to go through your, for myself, a gratitude list of what I do have. And that shifts that from that kind of yearning, wanting, resenting, or wanting more to appreciating what one does have. So perspective is so big, right? That glass half full or half empty. And I want to feel more peace. So so these are simple little techniques to help get out of the shame and into gratitude and feeling peaceful and okay and enough.
Yeah. Those are great. I think those are great ideas. Thank you for sharing them. I think that there are so many ways to sort of repair that. And I think a lot of it is tied back to our childhood. So I'm sure you did a lot of work before that too, right? Before you get to the I'm in the mirror.
Yes.
Because a lot of that stuff really is buried back there. And we don't want to linger there. I think in therapy, people think sometimes we're just going to stay in the past. Mm-hmm. But I do think you have to use it as an exploratory measure to uncover and unpack what are the belief systems that you developed or the coping mechanisms that you had to really utilize to survive, and how are those affecting you now? Mm-hmm. And not feeling good enough and feeling shame, I think, is a huge part of the struggle.
Right? Yes.
Okay. So let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about what we call the shame monsters and our need to please, perfect, and perform. We'll be right back.
Started to crack. Woke up in Chicago and the sky turned black. And you're so high, you have to be an angel. I'm so high, I'm so high, I can see an angel. I hear your heart beating in your chest. The world slows till there's nothing left. Skyscrapers look on like great unblinking giants. And those heavy days in June when love became an act of defiance. Oh, 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 to each other. Hold on to each other. Hold on to each other. Hold on to each other. And you're brokenhearted and the world was too. And I was beginning to lose my grip. And I have always held it loosely. This time I admit I felt it really start to slip. And choirs sang in the street, and I would come to you to watch the television screen in your hotel.
Welcome back to Moody with Dr. Sage. My guest today is Janine Nicole. She's an MFT associate. And we are talking about all things therapy related. In general, our moods, our minds, and our real lives. And under the veil of that topic, we are talking about vulnerability and shame and worthiness. I know, great topics on a Sunday morning. Good morning. So right before the break, we were talking about shame. And I like to call them, I'm not the only person, the shame monsters sort of show up. And I think they show up when we're needing to be perfect, when we need to please other people, when we need to perform and deliver whatever it is we think we're supposed to quote unquote do. And so as a result, right, we're going to pay a price for needing to sort of numb or deal with those overwhelming feelings of shame. And so guess where that takes us? Often into addiction. And whether it's addiction of a substance or an activity, relationships, you know, alcohol, drugs, sex, whatever it is, that's what we tend to do. And you have extensive experience with the topic of addiction. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about numbing and the relationship between that and substance abuse. If you would just share with us a little bit what your experience has been.
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely the self-medicating to numb is very effective. I have worked with all sorts of addiction, but mainly alcoholism, drug addiction. But it can also veer into overeating and overexercising and overworking. I've been amazed at how kind of workaholism takes you out of feelings. in my own experience, when I am packed with work, just running from one event to the next, there's no room for feeling or being. Mm-hmm. So I was just amazed in my recent experience of understanding on a deeper level how effective workaholism can be. Because mm-hmm. then I'd find when there's a bit of downtime, a lot of emotions would come up and feeling, and then sorting through what had happened the last couple days. So it is amazing how self-medicating in these various ways can take you out of feeling anything, much mm-hmm. less shame. Very effective.
Absolutely. And I think
that's destructive.
Very destructive. Sorry. Now, I was just going to say, I think the workaholism is at a whole new level now mm-hmm. because you can be on your computer and pretty much work everywhere yes. at all times. I mean, how often I've been on vacations so often and see people on their laptops, and they're not just, you know, surfing the web. They are doing work.
Right.
We are so connected to that. So it's a great way to numb and not to deal with what you're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about substance abuse in terms of alcohol and drugs? I think that this has always been an issue for most humans. I believe mm-hmm. the need to numb is fundamental to not wanting to feel and it being overwhelming. And so whether it's smoking the peace pipe or whatever it is that people have used substances to avoid or to relax or for all kinds of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want this to be a judgy conversation mm-hmm. about it at all. I just want to talk about, you know, what that looks like in people's lives and what your experience has been.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, having some like normal drinking or moderate drinking can help you relax after a hard day of work. It's when that using that drinking or any other substances, pills, I mean, a lot of people do use Xanax and anti-anxiety medication. And in moderation, it works. But it's when there's impairment, when it crosses that line mm-hmm. of not being within balance and moderation, right? Because going out to dinner with friends and having a couple glasses of wine is enjoyable and mm-hmm. relaxing, and that's part of our culture and mm-hmm. fine. It's when it crosses that line, when it becomes destructive and impairing aspects of your life, whether you're not functioning as well at work, or the wife or husband is getting upset because their experience is that the person's consuming too much and no longer there with them.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't have to be passed out on the sofa, but after several drinks of someone, I'm sure most of us have experienced that, the person kind of fades and they're not as present.
Right.
And there's that lack of connection.
Right.
So I think it's when it starts becoming destructive and impairing aspects of your lives that it's helpful to kind of step back and reflect and look at it.
Right. And I think what you said just now is lack of connection.
Yes.
I think that so many of us do feel lack of connection, and using substances helps numb that out, or engaging in activities, because mm-hmm. the truth is that's what we really want, right? We want to be seen. We want to
yes.
feel that we belong. We want to be connected to people. Maybe not all the time for us mm-hmm. introverts, but we do, you know? And so when that starts to fracture, we start seeking ways to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so let's see. I do also want to talk about vulnerability in terms of how that affects our need to sort of numb out too, and what that's like, and how scary it is when we're trying to avoid shame. You know, the antidote to that is really to be vulnerable, to openly admit to your insecurities, your failures, and to know that you can do that and then keep moving forward, and,
mm-hmm.
and you're not weaker for doing so.
Mm-hmm.
What has been your experience with, let's say, high-powered people and accepting their vulnerabilities?
I find in the men that I've worked with, very difficult. That is not something they're accustomed to doing whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
But in the work with them, that is a piece that I certainly advocate and we explore. And through that vulnerability comes more connection, mm-hmm. an authentic connection.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the key things is choosing who you're vulnerable with, like people that can be receptive to it.
Absolutely.
Who can provide empathy and safe. You don't want to go take that vulnerable side of yourself to someone that is going to harshly judge it, shut it down, because then it just adds to more shame and injury.
Right.
That is something I always kind of explore with the clients of, yes, your wife, that's a safe person, mm-hmm. typically, to start practicing being more vulnerable mm-hmm. and really authentic, sharing who you are, the good, bad, and the weaknesses, all aspects.
Right. I agree. I think that's the place where no one really teaches us how to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, we're so conditioned to put the face on and put the mask on, and we do need to do that a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. You just can't unload on anybody and everybody and be that, like, I'm just going to vomit my truth on you right now, because that is sometimes not appropriate.
Correct.
And I think that is where people sometimes get confused. You know, it's like, well, where do I do that? Well, you have to first determine that someone is safe, yes. and trustworthy before you share those things. Mm-hmm. And in a culture where people do tend to, unfortunately, share each other's secrets or betray, mm. it happens. We're a culture of exposing each other at times, right? There's a whole ability to watch that on television constantly, people's vulnerabilities.
That's true. Yeah. Betrayal everywhere.
Constantly. And so it is important to find that. But I think because of our current culture, people are so disconnected. Mm-hmm. We often don't have that many people we can be vulnerable with. And so not only being vulnerable, but finding people to do it with mm-hmm. can be a challenge.
Yes.
But I do believe the power in owning who you are and being real, which is, to be honest, the whole purpose of this whole show, not only today, but moving forward, just telling our real stories that we don't talk about and being vulnerable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And through that, I think through when you find the safe people and the trustworthy people that hold your confidence, that as you do share and connect and be vulnerable, it fills you with peace and feeling connected. Mm-hmm. And I think so much of our society today, that lack of connection and that loneliness, is people end up feeling empty and self-medicate, or
right.
lonely and self-medicate.
Right.
It's like, I want to feel connected and have some peace and enjoy this gift of life.
Right. Right, because otherwise, then what are we all doing?
Right. Race to nowhere.
Exactly, exactly. And I think that's the hard part, is that so many of us, you know, do feel unfulfilled in where we've arrived. We think, if I just get here, it's all going to be okay. But the truth is, you know, it's not always okay. And you mm-hmm. have to keep pushing to the next level of even of yourself. Well, no, where do I need to go deeper? What relationships do I need to further enhance? Mm-hmm. I think that's really important.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. All right. So now I think as we talk, and I would like to talk more about this topic, and I probably will next week, more about vulnerability and compassion for ourselves. Mm-hmm. But let's talk a bit about that. I think that self-compassion is a huge piece of coming to terms with our shame and our vulnerability, and whether we've exposed ourselves and we feel like, oh my gosh, should I have actually shared that? That was super scary. Mm-hmm. Having compassion to say, it's okay, you know, that was a trusted person. It's okay to show who you are. What role do you think self-compassion plays in sort of living your best life?
It's huge, because without it, being hard on oneself and berating oneself, you're miserable and you're sitting in the shame. I think that having self-compassion is a huge remedy to the shame. Mm-hmm. And I think it takes time for those of us that maybe came from a place where the first knee-jerk reaction is really harsh, like, you stupid idiot, how could you have said that?
Right.
And I've had clients that is the knee-jerk reaction. Right. And it takes time to really practice to, one, be mindful and aware when it happens, because mm-hmm. some in early stages of recovery or coming into therapy aren't even aware of how harsh they are on themselves. So through self-awareness, catching oneself, and then reframing it, like, mm-hmm. it's okay, having that compassion. Some clients have had difficulty even doing that with themselves, that now, like, that's not masculine or that's stupid. And two things have been helpful. One is, think of it as the little injured child, or the child, for one particular client I was thinking about, who had been injured and abused at like 7. Mm. It's like, take that little boy, and would you say that to him? Would you treat him that way?
Right.
And it's, no, of course not. Or, I find that one very helpful. or someone that you love, like if it's a niece or a child, like, would you speak to your niece that way? It's like, no, never. So reframe it and try to address it as you would someone that you care about. And then it starts to integrate and it get internalized.
Those are really good strategies. I think those can be really helpful in terms of, we don't see ourselves as that little wounded child, you know, and I think this is the part I said earlier of therapy that gets a bad rap. But the truth is, how you see yourself, how you see relationships, how you see your value, I truly believe is all rooted in your childhood.
And so, I do too.
Right? So if you have a critical parent, I see this all the time. I'm like, whose voice is talking right now?
Yes.
Because it's not yours.
Right.
Right? It's that parent that was just like, well, that was good, but it could have been better. Yes. It's just, you know, people just begin to become their parents in that regard, towards themselves. And it's heartbreaking to watch them do it to themselves. But what they often do is then do it to their children.
Yes.
Right? And so I'm like, look, when you help yourself, it is the greatest gift you can give to your kids is to work on yourself.
I say that too.
I know. And it's not the easiest thing to do sometimes. No. But I really believe that doing that repair work for yourself allows you to parent. You know, you're not sort of in this instruction manual of parenting or even partnering, being the partner that you think you should be. You're sort of authentically, you know, you can give them grace if you can give yourself grace.
Yes. Beautifully said. Agreed.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about some of the strategies in terms of addressing negative self-talk, thinking about talking to ourselves as we would talk to our child. Do you have any other ideas about what is helpful to address those sort of feelings of not being enough? And what can be a good, some good strategies besides the already awesome ones you gave me?
Well, it's interesting. I think basic self-care. Tying to, again, going back to kind of the work that I've done with men, but I also had experienced this myself, of so many people not even giving themselves the gift of three meals a day.
Right.
Like something so simple as eating three meals a day, which is a basic foundation of our self-care to nourish ourselves. And it it regulates our whole system, our blood sugar biologically. Sleep. Making sure that one gets eight whatever hours of sleep that is what they need. I think by taking these basic, because so many clients I had heard that would stay up working till 3 a.m. and then have 6 a.m. meetings and then exhausted, and it just lacked basic self-care of giving, of eating regularly, sleeping regularly, even the gift of exercise, because that takes care of your physical body, but it's also good for your mood. So I believe that just focusing on the basics of self-care starts to address this issue.
I absolutely agree.
From core.
You know, it's funny because I feel like this self-care becomes a cliche. Like, what's your self-care like? And it's kind of sounds silly, but I also know that self-care encompasses our physical needs. So things like eating and sleeping or getting massage or exercise. It encompasses our emotional and mental needs, which I think does include whether it's connection with friendship, with your partner, in therapy, you know. And so, when I, even for myself, when I think about, okay, where am I lacking? It is part of my own scarcity. I'm always lacking in that in that regard. And it's hard to do in the world we live in.
Yes.
I have, you know, so many patients that say, like, that sounds great, but when am I going to do that? And I can't sit there and say, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. Because I get it. It's really difficult. You have to create it for yourself.
Yes.
And it's the first thing we give up, right? It's the first thing we're tired. Like, I'm not going to go to the gym today. Oh, I didn't sleep well. I'm not going to walk. Or I don't have time for a salad. I'll just eat this slice of pizza. I mean, it is reality. And then you go back to self-compassion. Okay, I didn't do such a good job today with my self-care or this week or this month, but I can always start over.
But I do think that those basics, doing the best you can to be mindful and carve out that time for your basic self-care, which is going to ground you and center you, is the greatest act of self-compassion and self-love.
So what are your top three favorite things to do for self-care?
I love massage. It just, it soothes me, it grounds me. And through a chiropractor, many of them, which I love, are offering those services. So the cost is less than going to the spa.
Right.
So I do give myself the gift of chiropractic massage every week, exercise and sleep, because if my sleep is impaired, I do not function very well, and I'm not very happy, and I'm cranky, and I don't enjoy my life. And I'm very aware that at middle-aged, that this life isn't going to go on forever.
Right.
It's not infinite. So I have been more mindful of this moment and self-care and enjoy.
Right. And I think that's important because, let's say you're a parent, I think many parents think it's selfish to have self-care. Mm. You know, I find myself like, okay, I need to do one more thing with you and then I'll do that. But then it's 10 o'clock at night and now there's no time for self-care. I'm not going to do yoga or meditate. I'm just going to go to sleep. So,
or a shower, a warm shower.
Right.
I do love long, warm showers with candles.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And it can be, maybe it's not a long shower at 10 o'clock, but a 5-minute, just soothing for you.
Mm-hmm.
As you said earlier, I'm a huge proponent of when I give to myself, as you were saying, like with the kids, sometimes it's so hard balancing, giving to them, attending to them, but attending to ourselves. And I always remind myself that when I give to me and I'm grounded, I am a better parent.
Mm-hmm.
I am able to give to them better, attune to them better, be less cranky, which is a gift.
Yes, 100%.
So that's sometimes when I'm feeling guilty, well, I shouldn't take the time. I try to take the big picture for a moment and look at, it's not just benefiting me, it is benefiting my loved ones in the house when I take care of me. Because when I'm too depleted, everyone suffers, me and the family and others.
Yeah, I actually, the other day you said that to me, that was really helpful. Like, remember, this helps everybody. Like, that's so true. Because we were actually talking about this show, and one of the things that came up was that I think for women hear this concept a lot more than men. You know, what's your self-care? What are you doing? But to be fair, I think men, we don't really talk about men and what men need in terms of self-care and that. So what comes up for you with that idea?
I agree with you 100%, and I'm so sorry, all the men out there in our culture, because it's got to be hard.
Yeah.
It's hard for us as women, but at least we share and encourage each other.
Right.
I think that by having this conversation and hopefully more moving forward, that we can have that be part of our culture for men, because they do shoulder a lot, especially if they, well, in both cases. I was going to say, especially if they're single breadwinners, but even if both people are working, it's just in this day and age, it is fast-paced, it's stressful. There's a badge of honor with, I think, being super busy and being accomplishing a lot. There really is, like, oh, I put in a 20-hour day, and there's kind of a badge of honor with that. And I think that does all of us a disservice, but especially the men. So I know with my work with the men, I talk about this. I talk about self-care. And as they take good care of themselves and do these simple practices that we're talking about, they're going to be less inclined to self-medicate.
Right.
Because they are angry and resentful and suffering.
Right. And so, exhausted.
Yes, and exhausted.
Exactly. I do. I think that's an important conversation because, you know, male culture, I don't really think they do benefit. And with these topics that you hear in, you know, women's magazines, and I know men's magazines have them too, but not to the degree that we do, that we're inundated with all these concepts. And, you know, this sort of fallacy that men don't feel as much or don't, you know, it just really breaks my heart, you know, being a mother of at least of 3 boys and a daughter who I love very much. But I think that I've witnessed the differences between the two sometimes and how much they don't get that attention and focus. And so and the truth is we all need it, no matter what shape, color, size, where we come from. We all need to work harder on taking care of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Yeah. Well said.
Yeah. Well, I think that I would say, as we're wrapping up the show today, I would really encourage all of our listeners to really think about your own lives in terms of how do you take care of yourself and how do things like shame and vulnerability and worthiness show up, and maybe do some work on exploring those things. Like I said before, Brené Brown is an incredible resource, and she's sort of really becoming popular. And just focusing on what can you do to help heal your life and to be a better partner, a better person, a better parent, a better employer, employee, whatever. And I want to thank you so much for coming on today, Janine. It just warms my heart, and you really help my nerves. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
I'm hopeful you will come back and talk about a lot of other things you have a lot of experience with.
Thank you.
Yeah. Do you have anything else you want to say in your last few minutes?
Just concur and agree with what you said. And everyone deserves self-care and to find some peace and enjoy this life and this day. We all deserve it.
I agree. Well said. Well said. So you've been listening to Moody with Dr. Sage, and we are live, as I said, on Sunday mornings at 8 a.m., or you can download the app at KX93.5. And I'd love for you to send me any questions or comments. I'm still formatting the show. I'd like to at some point take callers. And I also would love for people to email me at moodywithdrsage@gmail.com. So that's M-O-O-D-Y with D-R-S-A-G-E at Gmail. And send me some questions or show ideas, and maybe I'll be able to answer them on air. Again, you've been listening to Moody with Dr. Sage. My guest was Janine Nicole, an MFT associate and wonderful human being all the way around. And thanks again for having me today. I really appreciate it.